The Venturi's Voice podcast brings together some of technology's brightest minds to discuss all things leadership, technology, and staffing. Keep the conversation going in the Venturi's Voice Slack group and have the opportunity to meet some of our amazing guests. You can download Venturi's Voice via iTunes or via the Venturi Group website at venturi-group.com. Today's guest is Peter Thomas, an award-winning analytics and data executive who has held the top data job at either group or divisional level since the year 2000. To that point as well, like say when you contributed, you actually did make that point. Again, we won't talk about any particular vendors or anything like that, but you know, when you were making that point just before we got started there about, you know, the tools and maybe the how insignificant it might be to go to one or the other. It's funny because maybe it's the power of advertising that these vendors have created for themselves to where, you know, it's become like almost a technical discussion. Well, a very technical discussion about whether you go to one tool or the other, especially within kind of BI and data analytics, right? But why, to that point, why is that such a big conversation? Because that's not surely not where the substance is by tool, you know. I'm a marketer, so, you know, my preferred supplier is actually HubSpot. You know, that's not to say that Marketo also wouldn't be equally as good, but it doesn't seem to have that same weight of conversation that a lot of these data and analytics tools do, whether you use kind of one vendor or the other. And I'm not sure quite why in data it seems to be this kind of obsession and something that's very, you know, very much a conversation consistently.
Yeah, I think part of the reason is that some things that you need to do to be successful in the data field are actually really hard. So maybe it's better to focus on some things that are a bit easier to get traction with. And it doesn't take an enormous amount of effort to put together some sort of RFP with the requirements you've got for, say, a visualization tool, and then to go out and get some people to come and pitch to you. That's the sort of thing you could give to a competent project manager, and they get it done, and you'll be going, and it'll be fine. So it's something that you can address without having to do lots and lots of hard work. Whereas if what you're trying to do is, well, how do we actually want to use data in this organization? That isn't so quick. It's hard. It requires getting time from people who are often quite busy, and who might, at least in the first instance, until you've spent some time with them, think, well, this is really a hot topic for me. I've got other things to worry about. And that stuff's all hard. But everyone likes to feel they're making progress. So perhaps we're failing to get traction with senior people around what they want to do with their data or how we can blend this into the overall strategy. But at least if we talk to some tools people, we can show that we've made some progress. We can have a nice little report showing green because we've done something. Now, I'm being a little jaundiced there, but not terribly, I don't think.
Interesting. Yeah, well, I don't think you are. Maybe that's kind of just technical roles in general now. Maybe that with the availability of all the tools that we have, it's easy enough to kind of skip a step, you know. Do you think that because the tools are so good now that it's easier maybe not to learn the foundations as maybe if you were starting a technical career 20 years ago, you had no choice but to learn the foundations. You know, I took some finance classes in university, just as an example. And, you know, we now have calculators that can calculate, you know, compound interest, for an example, right? And my teacher was saying that, yeah, your exam, you have the calculators and you can actually use it. When I was learning it, and we had to actually learn the foundations, and she was a believer that you actually learn the fundamentals, and, you know, you were had to ask why a lot more. And maybe, you know, we're in a place now where people are kind of skipping that phase because of the, you know, how powerful some of these tools are. And, you know, maybe you aren't learning the fundamentals in the same way. Do you think that that's potentially that's something that could happen?
I do, and I guess this might be a longish answer, and there's two parts to it and two different analogies. One of which is my background as a mathematician. And I can recall when calculators first came out, I'm actually that old, and it was just, well, I don't need to learn how to do arithmetic anymore, do I? It's completely hopeless. And of course, what calculators do isn't really mathematics. Arithmetic isn't really mathematics, but the effort that you put into learning how the operations of addition and subtraction and division and multiplication work actually stand you in good stead when you get onto more complicated concepts in mathematics. So having a calculator, that's great, but how do you get a sense that, well, you type something in, you've got something that's the answer, okay, that's great. If you've got some clue about what you're doing yourself, you can say, hang on, that can't be right. I must have transposed a number, or I must have done something wrong. If you haven't done the work yourself, then the calculator says this is the answer, and you just write it down. The other part, which I think is also pertinent, is I always go back to thinking about the automobile engine, the industry. The automobile industry has changed out of all recognition. There used to be these massive differences between how cars were produced by different manufacturers. And it's not so much the same. Toyota had this massive advantage based on how it did its manufacturing, its quality control. And then, you know what, everyone copied that. Many of the top-end German organizations really prided themselves on engineering. A couple of things have happened. The others have got better at engineering. And also, because there's always a pressure to make more profit of what you're doing, but they've probably had a little bit of corner cutting with some of the Germans as well. I mean, they probably get upset with me saying it, but having driven BMWs for many years, I can tell that things aren't always quite the same as how they used to be. But nowadays, it's not really about how fast it is, how well it handles, and those types of things, because it's actually relatively simple within, or relatively similar within bounds. So what's different is the branding. What's different is how you relate to a particular mark. Is it a mark that is designed to be young and go-getting, or is it one that's meant to be maybe slightly older and respectable and well-established, or something else? Is it something that's got a lot of interesting technology and you're showing you're technologically savvy? The actual car is probably not too different from each other. And I think it's got that way with some of these front-end tools. There are clearly some differentiators between them, but there's an awful lot of me-tooism as well. So, and you can understand it. If you're in the sales cycle and you work for vendor A and you lose out because your tool doesn't have this particular feature, then what do? You go back to your product development people and say, you know what, this other vendor's just beaten us to this major account because they can do X and we can't do X. Well, sure enough, the next release of that tool, they can do X. And that's been happening for years. So you've now got these incredibly rich tools, and it's a little bit like Excel or Word, that there's so many things in them that the average person never uses more than, say, 10% of the functionality. And they are very similar to each other. And I honestly feel that you're not going to really go wrong, whatever you pick. So often it's going to be more concerns like commercial ones. It's going to be ones like, how well does this fit into other things that I'm doing? Is it nice and easy to surface little exhibits that I've built in this tool in, say, front-end applications, or is that kind of a bit of a pain to do? It's those types of things. And the tools, much the same as cars, are more brands that you're buying into. There are some exceptions, and I don't want to say there's absolutely no difference. I think that's not true, but I think the differences are over-exaggerated sometimes.
Yeah, I get that. And I think that, you know, because the way that tech has been commoditized as, and aside from the obvious ways that tech's been commoditized, from the tools perspective, it's easy to see why we're in this situation that we're in at the moment. And, you know, we, from our perspective, from a recruitment perspective, you kind of see less of a demand now for people with particular tools experience, right? It's kind of becoming less of a thing. It did spike and there was that initial trend towards that, but we're kind of seeing it come out the other way now, and it's like, you know, hiring managers aren't as interested in people who use the same sort of similar tools maybe, or haven't got the experience with the tools that, or the vendors that they buy with, and it's not as much of a concern because that's not necessarily what makes people valuable, right? From a data perspective.
No, I'd agree with that entirely. And I think the area where I've seen the trend almost go in the other way, and it's probably a lack of maturity compared to other places, is when you look at the really sort of top data jobs, whether that's chief analytics officer or director of data or chief data officer. And those are jobs that I get approached about on a fairly regular basis. And it's quite interesting how often you look at the job spec and it says, well, you have to be a world expert in data governance. But also you have to have hands-on experience with Apache Spark. And you also have to have a very good understanding of data science and ideally a statistical background. And also it would be great if you understood how ETL works and a foundation in both high-scale SQL Server and also big data would be helpful. And yeah, maybe that would be great, but I think it's, again, a misunderstanding. And to me, when you're in that top data position, you're a conductor of an orchestra. And what some of these requirements seem to be saying to me is, well, you need to be able to play the violin better than the first violinist, and you need to be able to be a better flautist than the people who are in the flute section. And that's not what a conductor does. They need to be able to tell how those people are performing and whether the first violinist is any good or not, but they don't need to be able to play the violin themselves. Now, a lot of conductors have been instrumentalists before, but not normally multi-instrumentalists. And in order to get the best out of the orchestra, you need skills that transcend the ability to play any one of those instruments. It's how does the whole thing come together? And I still see a little bit, well, we need a conductor who can play every single instrument. And I think the greatest conductors that have been around are not those who play every single instrument. They're the ones who can really understand how the orchestra is meant to hang together. And I think that's how data roles ought to be. And I think it's how they will end up. At the moment, I think there's a little bit of immaturity around this area. It's still, at least in the UK, a relatively new role, I think, to have the top data job. I'm interested in what you see in that. I agree with what you say about some of the roles, heads of business intelligence and what have you. I agree with you completely. But those top data jobs, I do see like that. Is that your experience as well?
I think, well, it's difficult to say, but I think there's certainly becoming a presence where people are kind of sharing their thoughts on a greater scale. I think the introduction of the CDO role, I can speak on because, you know, we've covered it quite extensively. And I think those kind of top data roles and what's expected, I think what they're trying to say is that it's a cultural shift, right? So yes. I think exactly to your point, it's not, we need to get away out of those ideals. And I think that can speak for a lot of industry and a lot of sectors within business just in general, is that just because you are good or you're very technically capable doesn't necessarily mean that you're going to excel in a leadership role.
No, absolutely.
And I think that the CDO role, you know, you've seen Peter and Caroline who wrote the CDO playbook. We kind of had them on the show and a few of the CDOs. And yeah, they're not talking about technical work. They're talking about, you know, what value can we pull from our data teams? You know, where is the innate value? What are people... what can we clear up misconceptions? Can we kind of get the points across to the fact that this isn't just a department that we can put in there? It actually requires a cultural shift across all business to adopt these practices. And these are kind of the high level things that they're trying to push. And I think from their perspective, and rightly so, that's very much kind of the agenda that they bring to the table from a high-level data professional. But there's clearly still, across the board, a lot of misconceptions about that kind of leadership piece and what's to be expected from that. And I think just from data teams in general, I've, you know, a lot of people are saying that the kind of the hype has gone up, there's been huge investment, and now, you know, it kind of surpassed now, and now we're waiting for the substance to come from the data teams. Well, that's kind of all good and well. But do you even know what you're investing in the first place? Do you know what you can expect from them? And I think the leaders these leadership positions are the people who should be able to be very good communicators and articulate the points in layman terms of what you can expect from the data teams and kind of setting those expectations.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. And I had the honour of having Caroline do an interview for my blog as well, and we very much saw eye to eye on some of these things. I think sometimes, again, I've been around a while, and I've seen the hype cycle with a number of different approaches as well as technology. And after a while, you were beginning to see articles saying, well, X number of big data implementations fail to deliver value. Y number of data lakes are actually being cancelled or what have you. And a lot of that happens to the CDO as well. Well, we've got the CDO. We don't need to worry about data anymore. They're going to sort it all out. And then some disappointment because that doesn't really happen. And the thing that's common with all of these different technologies and approaches and everything else, same with data governance, is that it's humans doing stuff, and it's humans trying to get other humans to behave in a different way. And that's really hard, and it's easy to get wrong. It's also particularly easy to get wrong if you don't actually spend enough time thinking about the cultural side of it and realizing that at the end of the day, it's not about a data policy. It's not about a state-of-the-art visualization tool. It's not about what the technical underpinnings of what you're doing are. All those things are really important. Please don't think I'm not saying they're important, but the crucial stuff is how you get people to behave differently. So the aim of most CDOs would be to say, we want the organization to value data more. We want the organization to get more out of the data that it has. And we want the organization to pay greater care and attention to the data that's captured and how it's used. And those are all human behavioral things and nothing to do with technology. Now, if you get those things happening, then you can layer on top of that all sorts of things and you can have an awful lot of success. But you can be brilliant with the architecture, can be brilliant with the tools. If you don't address the human side of it, it's going to fail, unfortunately. And I think that drives this. The figure varies, but it seems to be with most technologies and most new paradigms, you see between sort of 60 and 70% failure rate. Not necessarily cancelled, but not living up to expectations. And an awful lot of that is exactly what you said, a failure to attend to the cultural side of it. Change management, not in the sense of the change organization, but actually the management of change. We do this today, we need to do something else in the future. And that's precisely what the top data job ought to be doing. And the same would apply in digital transformations. You often hear a lot about digital transformations becoming too focused on the technology. It's got to be about behaviours.
Yeah, I think it's being realised more and more, but these are points that really need to have more of a voice and be articulated more frequently because, you know, we think about technology, we think about data, we think about the impact from the product side of things, right? We think about the consumer-facing side, but actually what we're now seeing across the board, you know, and I've just had the CIO of Virgin Trains on the podcast this morning, and you know he spoke of this as well, and he was talking about that side of things all going well, great, thumbs up. But actually, the bigger challenge is now internally, and how we're kind of managing this change management, if you want to call that, internally, and how we're rolling those things out. And that's really where the bulk of his time has come from. And that actually has changed quite dramatically from what his perspective over the last kind of 10 to 20 years, where you're now liaising with departments that you never would have liaised with, you know, 10 to 15 years ago. And I'm sure you can probably speak of those experiences as well. You now are really building great relationships and partnering up with sides of the business that you probably would never have spoke with, maybe, you know, communications, HR, whatever. But now that is actually becoming, you know, an intricate part of what's required to roll out successful innovations and data strategies.
I think that to an extent that you do what it takes, and that what it takes is going to vary in different organizations, and different departments have different roles. So in some organizations, HR might be very much a sort of a backroom type function, making sure that the policies for recruitment are adhered to and ensuring that the way people are remunerated is fair and reasonable. In other places, they are very much change agents, and they're about how can we add value to ensure that our human capital is in the best place and that it's leveraged in the best way. And in those types of organizations, HR can be a key partner for you. So you're entirely right. I've also found that a key area that I've worked with quite frequently has been, well, two different, sometimes they merge together, marketing and also strategy development. And I think getting the two of those together, sometimes there are strategic marketing functions as well, I think they can be a great lever as well. They're often full of people who are bursting with ideas, want to get things done, and don't necessarily always have the wherewithal to do that. So I think there's some great things to do there. They often have the ear of senior people as well. So I think they're good people to make friends with. My approach tends to be with all of these things is to talk to as many people as I can across as many departments as I can, and with each of them find something that I can do to help that is actually going to make their lives better. And then you build a coalition to try and move things forward. But I think doing that as opposed to just broadcasting that you built something and everyone should use it, I mean, that just seems slightly foolish, really. And you hear about it less frequently, but it still does happen sometimes, unfortunately.
Yeah. Well, like I say, it's a do this, send to all users, job done, right? Doesn't tend to work anymore. what are you finding at the moment? I saw that you obviously, we had GDPR that happened in May, the official rollout of GDPR in May, obviously kind of piqued everyone's interests. I think that's kind of an obvious one, but, you're quite proactive at obviously producing content, writing for your own blog. What are you kind of finding yourself currently motivated to kind of write about and investigate at the moment?
There's always a little bit of a lag, so the things that I'm sort of interested about and writing about now will probably appear a little bit down the line. So I'm continuing to do interviews with a range of chief data officers and indeed chief analytics officers, the top data job people, just trying to get a perspective on how that works and just to contribute a little bit in the same way that you mentioned Peter and Caroline with the CDO playbook. Just to contribute to forming what this role ought to be going forwards. So getting people's input there and intertwining it with my own perspective, that's interesting. But I'm also spreading that out a little bit. Have begun to sort of think a little bit about how this plays out in the world of artificial intelligence and machine learning. So there'll probably be some interviews pertinent to that side of things as well. And figuring out how the types of things that need to go on in the data arena can play into things like machine learning and provide a foundation for it, or indeed benefit from some of the outputs of it. Those are some things that I think are going to be issues for organizations, and I'm quite interested in getting involved in writing about that and hopefully helping organizations with it as well.
Interesting. Yeah. Well, I think so. So it's very much the kind of the leadership topics as well that you kind of gravitating towards a little bit at the moment then.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I've moved in between things. We were talking about the skills that were necessary, and I suppose back in the day I was a decent flautist, to use my orchestra example, but more interested in either the conducting or sometimes providing help and mentorship to the person doing the conducting. There's a lot of people out there who are in a senior data role for the first time, and maybe they've come from a different type of background. Maybe they came from finance, maybe they came from risk, which is quite typical. Marketing, actually, I've seen a few times the top people going in the data field have got a marketing background. And I know a lot of people, and it's interesting to talk to people as they move into these new arenas and see what you can do to help them. Having gone through that myself, some tips that I can provide and some perspective as well, and often just almost acting as a clearinghouse, because I talk to a lot of people with that type of role. Obviously, I don't get into sharing commercial secrets, but sometimes it's helpful to say, well, I've got someone that I talk to who I know they had a problem similar to yours. They approached it the following way. Perhaps that would work for you. So interested in leadership myself, but also interested in leadership in terms of helping others to lead. Which is sometimes a lot harder than you might think.
Interesting. Well, maybe it's not. I don't think people underestimate that. But yeah, I think it's certainly a good point. And you know, I think the piece that's involved in data at the moment is the human side of things. And you've, like, say you contributed in the past, and some of the interesting points that are made are that where do we fill in the gaps with data? You know, how much can we rely on data without kind of this conversation? Again, actually interesting enough, we were talking about it before with the CIO of Virgin Trains, and he was saying that, you know, we look at all the data and it's a great navigator, but the substance that you can get from conversation, and that's where leadership will always be, you know, is in that substance side of things with the efficiency of communication. We rely on data and it allows us to do some incredible things, and obviously we make a lot of decisions based off it. But to get to the substance, that's where that kind of leadership piece comes in. And, you know, I just wonder whether you can elaborate on that a little bit more with regards to, you know, identifying the pieces where data doesn't answer all the questions. And that probably hurts a lot of data people to assume that they can't answer all the questions. Yes. But for me, that's where that piece of leadership and that ability to communicate comes in.
And I think there's a few different elements to this. There are the typical ones of data quality being a thing that holds people back, an absence of certain fields being entered incorrectly and what have you. Now, one of the nice things about machine learning is if you've got enough data, you can begin to get around that to some degree. And it's been demonstrated academically that that's the case, and certainly in practice. But let's pretend we don't have the magic wand of machine learning, and talk a little bit more about what you would do. I think people get there are two problems. One problem is that you dash ahead in the analytics space, and suddenly you lose your credibility because the stuff that you're producing is demonstrably wrong, and people can pick holes in it. And then you have to kind of stop and say, well, we need to go and do some work on data quality, but you've lost all that momentum. The other thing that people do, though, as well, is that they say, well, you know what, there's no point doing any of this stuff until we've got all the foundations right. Problem is, foundations take quite a long time, and people nowadays in organizations aren't terribly interested in you saying, well, I need 18 months before you get anything. So I think going too fast on the analytics side is an issue. Going too slow is also an issue. I think you've got to try and make some progress in both of those. And you've got a caveat. You've got to say, well, this is based on the data as is. We know there's some issues, but we believe you can draw the following conclusions. And that's, I think, an important thing to try to do. I think you also, in terms of doing things, okay, so let's supposing you've sorted out your data architecture, you've got some nice things going on, and you've got some beautiful dashboards that are on everyone's desk. You've also got a gleaming new data science function who are churning out all sorts of interesting exhibits and found out all sorts of nuggets of information. Who acts on this? What's the difference between a paper comes out from the data science people saying, you know, we've found a correlation between these two particular facts and we should do something about it? Well, how often does something get done about it? Or you've got a dashboard that's showing, well, actually, the trend's a bit adverse here. How often does someone actually go and do something about it? And I think that has been a challenge for our industry a lot. It's almost been you get to the final piece and say, well, I'm done. I've given the information to people. Here's an in-depth statistical analysis of this area. Someone's got to go and do something with this now. And I think that final few yards of actually how do you turn that into actual action is something that people don't pay enough attention to. And I think if you take data scientists, they will often say, well, okay, I've done my bit. I think the best data scientists are the ones who can somehow step into the shoes of the people who are receiving this information, and they can not only put out, this is what we found, they can say, well, this is what we think you ought to be doing about it, and can we help you to do this, and we can help you to monitor it as well. Same thing with dashboards. It works brilliantly if there's something on the dashboard, the chief exec rings up someone and says, can you tell me about this? They go and look at the same data, but then they go and do something about it, and that the tools enable you to do something about it. The doing piece is sometimes missing, and that's the real human behavioural stuff. That's not anything to do with technology, or it's not anything really to do with good design of visualisation or anything else. It's to do with human behaviour, and which is a tough nut to crack.
It's I couldn't have said it any better myself. I think that the most important piece for me is actually execution on it, right? Is doing the data work, and then actually having that team in place to be able to actually execute on it. And that's where, that's the articulation piece. That's the liaison between appropriate teams that need to make those adjustments come to them. And I think, like I say, reverting back to our point, that's what, you know, real good data people are able to do, is not just sit there all day and try and find any kind of nugget with some kind of complex data science piece to kind of show off their abilities. It's not actually being practical with how you approach data to, you know, pair that up with great commercial instincts, which is probably, again, an underutilized asset of a data person, is that ability to think commercially and pair that up with a great understanding of data, and then communicate it effectively to actually execute on results. And I think from a non-data executive level, that's probably where the elements of frustration come from big investment in data teams, is, well, actually, what's the outcomes that we're looking for? And it's easy to understand why, you know, those frustrations would be there.
I agree with you. And I think everyone will have stories. Myself, obviously, without going into organizations, where there's been some work in the data science space, and it's been good work. I can't really fault the work. And it's been presented to the exec, who have been really impressed. And, wow, this is amazing. You've got to get this in the hands of Claire and Rob, who are the people who need to use this. Please go and do that. And the data science team are delighted. They go off to Claire. They go off to Rob. And Claire and Rob don't know anything about this work. It's the first they've heard about it. It's their area, and they've got these people telling them, well, you're getting it wrong in this area. You've got to go and do it this way. Their entire incentive is probably to say, actually, no, that you're wrong. You don't understand our business. I've been doing this for 15 years. So I think that can be problematic. There is this mantra of, well, let the data speak for itself. And that makes sense to me academically. It doesn't make sense to me from a human behavioral point of view. I think that the data science team would be much better if they've been told to go and do some work in Claire and Rob's area, to go and form a relationship with Claire and Rob and actually say, well, what can we do for you? And it may be then that what you do is, instead of the data science people going back and presenting to the exec, it's a joint presentation. And the presentation is, look, we've worked with these people. They were able to unlock data we could never get at before. Some of the predictive stuff they've done is amazing. And it's all addressed this particular issue that we've got. And here is our business plan for what we're going to go and do about it. So it's a collaborative exercise, and it's immediately joined up, and it's immediately got actions. I think that, to me, seems superior. The problem is, sometimes data science people, the same as IT people and the same as any technical people, are much happier working with the data, working with the code, rather than the messy stuff of forming relationships. But the messy stuff of forming relationships is actually what's going to help you to do something positive, in my opinion and my experience.
Agreed, mate. Agreed. Peter, I genuinely couldn't agree more. And I think it's a message that we all need to do, kind of express a little bit more. You know, it's almost like stumbling at the final hurdle, isn't it? You know, you do all that great work, and then, you know, you want to see, surely deep down there's got to be that element where you want to see the kind of fruits of that come to fruition with, you know, actually execution and then ultimately business change based on your findings. So, yeah, it's interesting, isn't it, that that's actually a conversation that we're having to have. But, you know, it's execution's the key, I suppose, and it's not easy to find that talent who naturally has that ability, because maybe it is becoming so technical that we can't expect that to be an obvious trait that these talented data people are going to have.
It's sort of a shame, I think, as well. I again, I've been around for a while. I keep repeating this. But I can remember starting out in IT years and years ago, and I was a programmer when I started, and there was this trend for a while to get programmers to have more understanding of business and to actually have more contact with people who were on the commercial side and to develop that side of things. And that worked for a while. But then you have this countervailing trend that's been around for some time, which is to have intermediaries and often layers of intermediaries in between. And what that allows, the positive side, I suppose, is you say you allow the experts in doing one thing to focus on doing that. So if you're an expert in coding, you go and focus on coding. If you're an expert in building models, you go and focus on building models. But it's also, to an extent, insulated those people from their actual end customers. And I actually quite liked the idea where you had programmers talking to the people using their code. And that doesn't happen anymore. You've got a number of people in between who kind of, to an extent, you could say that the IT function now is it's a lot easier to just get on and do the things you want to do. Now some of this has been driven by outsourcing, obviously, and it's hard if you've got external people to have those relationships and what have you. But it's kind of been adopted across the board that even if you have got internal development teams, that they kind of just do development. And then there's three or four other people who go and talk to each other and eventually talk to business people. I would hate to see the data function go that way as well. Indeed, I was at a presentation a little while ago, again, won't name the organization, and the head of analytics stood up and talked about how you could get the best out of their function and that they were spending money on this function and they wanted to help. And he stood up and he talked about, well, what you need to do is you need to write down what you want and then you can send that to us and we'll ask some questions and then we'll write our own document and then we'll agree on it and then we'll go away and do some work on the data side and we'll give you an answer. And to me, that sounded like technical specifications for building a Java application. And it seemed to be missing the point. And if I was him, what I'd have been saying is I want my people to go out and sit down next to people who have got problems, understand the problem themselves directly, rather than getting it written down and then asking some questions. And that way you're really adding some value and you're broadening your experience and getting some commercial exposure. And I think a data person who's excellent at cleansing data, excellent at building models, is wonderful. One of those who's also got some commercial acumen as well, I think that's exactly what you want to have.
Agreed, mate. Agreed. Peter, I don't want to keep you too much longer, mate. I think it's probably worth leaving there, and I think we've made some really strong points about across the board, certainly from leadership and just the personality traits that we're looking at, and hopefully cleared up a few potential misconceptions as well. So cheers, mate. Thanks so much for taking the time. I genuinely really enjoyed the conversation, as always, a pleasure. Thanks for listening to the show. I look forward to hearing everyone's thoughts on this episode over on the Venturi's Voice Slack group. See you next time.